got my chin under the pipe, and finally my throat was free. I wheezed and took great gasping breaths from my mask. The black fog around me receded. I held onto the pipe with both hands and pushed forward, dragging Alvarez with me. He held on, but his grip grew weaker with every passing moment. I wriggled out from underneath and finally turned to face him. He lay crumpled on the ground and coughed violently. Just as I'd hoped, he'd put the tank down to strangle me. When I dragged him forward, the airline had popped out of his mouth. He could either hold onto the pipe or grab the airline. He'd chosen the pipe. He'd probably hoped he could choke me out, then get the air back before falling unconscious himself. He reached back with one hand for the airline, but I grabbed his collar and dragged him along the floor. He gasped again and the color drained from his face. I reached down and pulled the pipe out of his hands once and for all. His face fell to the floor. He was finally down for the count. I panted for a few seconds, then stood up. The rage boiled inside. I stepped forward with the sharp end of the pipe ahead of me. Alvarez lay helpless on the ground, a known murderer who had just tried to kill me. One thrust between the fourth and fifth ribs, right into his heart, I considered it. I really considered it. It's not something I'm proud of. I stomped his right upper arm with my heel. The bone crunched underneath. That was more my style. I didn't have time to waste, but I couldn't let that asshole escape again. I dragged his unconscious body into Rudy's office. I shoved Rudy aside and rummaged through his desk until I found handcuffs. I handcuffed Alvarez's good arm to the air shelter handle and threw the key out into the hall. You're welcome, Rudy. I checked my gizmo to see how much time I had left. 35 minutes. And it wasn't like I had until 0 o'clock. That was just an estimate. Hopefully a little on the safe side. Nevertheless, with over 2,000 people in town, some were sure to die ahead of schedule. I sheathed the pipe by slipping it between my belt and jumpsuit. Alvarez was knocked out, breathing chloroform, had a broken arm, and was handcuffed. But I still wasn't taking any chances. No more fucking ambushes. I ran toward life support. I wheezed harder and harder, and my throat swelled up, still pissed off about the recent strangulation. I probably had a hell of a bruise there, but it hadn't swollen shut. That was all that mattered. I tasted the bile on my breath, but didn't have time to rest. I powered through the obstacle course of bodies. I cranked up the flow rate on my air tank to get more oxygen into my aching lungs. It didn't help much. That trick doesn't work when the entire atmosphere is already oxygen. But at least the slight overpressure kept me from sucking in chloroform-riddled air around the edges. That was something. I reached life support and waved Rudy's gizmo at the door. It clicked open. Unconscious Vietnamese guys lay everywhere. I glanced at the main status screens along the wall. As far as the automated systems were concerned, everything was hunky-dory. Good pressure, plenty of oxygen, CO2 separation working perfectly. What more could a computer ask for? Mr. Duan's seat at the main panel was empty. I hopped into it and looked over the air management controls. The writing was in Vietnamese, but I got the general idea. Mainly because one wall showed a map of every pipe and airline in the system. As you can imagine, it was a pretty big schematic. I gave it a long, hard look. Right away, I picked out the emergency air system. All its lines were marked in red. Okay, where's the actuation valve? I said. I traced my finger along various red lines until I found one that entered life support itself. Then I found something that looked like a valve icon. Northwest corner. The room was a maze of pipes, tanks, and valves. But I knew which one I needed now. The third from the left in the northwest corner. On my way there, I passed Mr. Duan lying on the floor. From the looks of things, he'd tried to get to the valve himself, but hadn't made it. I grabbed the valve with both hands and turned. The throaty roar of pressure release echoed throughout the room. My gizmo rang in my pocket. It was so unexpected I drew my pipe ready for a fight. I shook my head at the silly move and resheathed my weapon. I answered the call. Jazz? Came Dale's voice. You all right? We passed out there for a minute. Dale, I said. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm in life support and I just opened the flush valve. You okay? We're awake. Feel like shit, though. No idea why we woke up. Sanchez spoke in the background.
Our lungs absorbed the chloroform out of the rover's air. Once the PPMs dropped below 2,500, it stopped working as an anesthetic.
You're on speaker, by the way, said Dale. Sanchez, I said flatly. So glad you're well. She ignored my bitchiness.
Is the flush working?
I ran back to the status screens. Each bubble now had multiple blinking yellow lights that hadn't been there before. I think so, I said. There are caution and warning lights all over the place. If I'm reading this right, they're probably the relief valves. It's venting. I prodded a technician in the chair next to me. He didn't stir. Of course, even with perfect air, it would take these guys a while to wake up. They'd been breathing 19th century anesthetic for half an hour. Hang on, I said. I'm going to take a sniff. I pulled the mask away from my face for a second and took a very shallow breath. I immediately fell to the floor. I was too weak to stand. I wanted to puke, but resisted the urge. I held the mask against my face again.
No good, I murmured. Air still bad.
Jazz, Dale said. Jazz, don't pass out.
I'm okay, I said, getting up to my knees. Each breath of canned air made me feel better. I'm okay. I think we just have to wait. It takes a while to replace all this air. We're good. We're doing good.
I guess the gods heard that and laughed their asses off. No sooner had I said it than the sound of air through the pipes quieted down and fell silent.
Guys? The air stopped.
Why? Asked Dale.
Working on it.
I shot a look at the status screens. Nothing obvious there. Then I went back to the line schematics on the wall. The main valve was right there in life support, and it led to a staging tank in that room. It read empty.
Ugh, I said. We ran out of air. There's not enough.
What? Dale said. How can that be? Life support has air to last months.
Not quite, I said. They have enough air to refill one or two bubbles, and they have enough battery power to turn CO2 back into oxygen for months. But they don't have enough oxygen to flush the entire city. It's just not something anyone thought of.
Oh, God, said Dale. We've got one chance, I said. Tron Lanvik stockpiled huge amounts of oxygen. It's in tanks right outside.
That bastard, said Sanchez. I knew he was after my oxygen for power contract.
I looked over the control board again. Thank God Vietnamese uses a superset of the English alphabet. One section of the schematic was labeled Lanvik. Tron's tanks are on the schematic, I said.
Of course they are, said Sanchez. Tron would have had to collude with them to make sure his air system could interface with theirs.
I ran my finger along the map. According to this, Tron's tanks are already connected to the system. There's a whole complicated set of valves in the way, but there's a path. So do it, Dale said. The valves are manual cranks. And they're outside, I said.
What? Why the hell are there manual valves out on the surface?
Safety, I said. Trond explained it to me earlier. Doesn't matter. I just memorized the pipe layout. It's complicated as hell, and I don't know what state the subvalves will be in. I'll work out what to do when I'm there. I bolted out of life support into the corridors of Armstrong.
Wait, you're going out? Dale said.
Wearing what? Your EVA suit's in here. I'm on my way to Conrad Airlock, and I've got a big pipe. I'll pry open Bob's locker and wear his gear.
Those lockers are centimeter-thick aluminum, said Dale. You'll never get through in time.
Okay, good point. I hurtled through the Armstrong-Conrad connector tunnel and checked my gizmo. We had 25 minutes left. I'll use a tourist hamster ball. How will you turn the cranks? God damn it, right again. Hamster balls had no arms, gloves, or articulation points at all. I'd have no way to grip anything outside. I guess you'll have to be my hands. The tanks are in the triangle between Armstrong, Shepard, and Bean. Meet me at the Bean-Shepard connector. I'll need your help to get into the triangle.
Roger, driving to the connector now. I'll get as close as I can and walk the rest of the way.
How will you get out of the rover without killing Sanchez?
I'd like to know that too, Sanchez added.
I'll put her in your suit before opening the airlock, he said.
My suit? Jazz!
Fine, yeah, sorry.
I plowed through Conrad ground as fast as I could. My home bubble had some of the most Byzantine passageways in town. When you put a bunch of artisans in one place with no zoning rules, their workshops expand to fill every nook and cranny. But I knew the layout by heart. Naturally, the tourist airlock was the farthest point from the Armstrong connector tunnel. I mean, where else would it be?
I finally got there. Two EVA masters lay on the floor in front of 16 tourists who'd passed out in their chairs. The leak had caught them in the middle of orientation. "Dale, I'm at the airlock."
"Copy,"
came his voice. He was far from his gizmo's microphone. "It's taking a while to cram Sanchez into your gear. She's kind of tall."
"I beg your pardon," she said. "I'm 164 centimeters, exactly average for a woman. I'm not tall. Your saboteur friend is short."
"Don't stretch out my suit," I said.
"I'll defecate in your suit."
"Hey, Sanchez, shut up," Dale said. "Jazz, save the city." I charged into the large airlock and pulled a deflated hamster ball from its cubby. "I'll let you know when I'm outside." I spread the flaccid plastic on the ground with the zip hatch facing up, pulled a scurry pack off the wall and put it on. Time for some Rudy Gizmo magic. I closed the inner airlock door, waved the gizmo across the airlock control panel, and it granted me access. Next problem. Airlocks are meant to be operated by EVA masters wearing suits with gloves. This was going to take some finesse. I deactivated the computer controls and switched to manual. First thing I did was spin the outer door's crank. The door, like all airlock hatches, was a plug door. The air pressure behind it pushed you into its seal. So, while I made it possible to open the door, you'd have to be Superman to actually pull it open against the pressure. But I'd move the physical latches out of the way, at least. I very slowly turned the venting valve. As soon as I heard the hiss of escaping air, I stopped turning it. At full open, the valve would let all the airlock's air vent into space in under a minute. But at this rate, it would take a bit longer. Long enough for me to not die, hopefully. I hurried to the hamster ball and crawled inside. It was an awkward affair, like getting into a collapsed tent, but that's just how these things worked. I closed the zip seals. There were three layers of them for safety. Then cranked the airflow valve on the scurry pack for a few seconds. The ball grew just enough for me to move around. Normally you do this shit when the airlock's not venting. You take your time, inflate, and wait for the EVA master to check your seals. I wouldn't have that luxury. The pressure in the airlock decreased, so my ball grew like a balloon in a vacuum chamber. That's not an analogy. It was literally a balloon in a vacuum chamber. I crawled forward. It's hard to move in a partially inflated ball, and reached out for the hatch handle. Since my ball wasn't fully rigid, I could bend the skin just enough to grip the hatch. I held on with both hands as the pressure tried to pry me loose. The ball grew more rigid as the airlock vented, making it harder and harder to hang onto the handle. That rubber really wanted to be a sphere now. It didn't approve of me wrapping it around a handle. I came close to losing my grip a couple of times, but managed to keep hold. Finally, the airlock pressure got low enough that I could pull the door open. The remaining air whooshed, and my ball sprang into full rigidity. It slapped my hands away from the edge so hard I actually fell on my ass. But it didn't matter. I was safely in my hamster ball, and the airlock was open. I got back up and something scraped against my leg. It was the pipe I'd appropriated from Lefty. In all the excitement, I'd forgotten I even still had it. Generally not a good idea to bring a pointy stick into your inflatable life support system, but it was too late to do anything about that now. I tightened my belt to make sure the pipe was secure. I wouldn't want it slipping out. I checked the scurry pack. All was well. Remember, they're designed to be worn by tourists. They take care of everything on their own. I ventured out onto the surface. For all its limitations, a hamster ball is great for running in. No clunky boots, no thick suit legs to push around, no lugging around 100 kilograms of gear. None of that. Just me in normal clothes with a moderately heavy backpack. I got up to speed and rolled across the terrain. Whenever I hit a bump, I bounced into the air. Well, not air, but you know what I mean. There was a reason tourists paid thousands of slugs for this. In other circumstances, it would have been fun as hell. I ran along the arc of Conrad Bubble until Bean came into view. I beelined for Bean, then followed its perimeter. I tapped my earpiece to make sure it was on. "How's it coming, Dale?" "Sanchez is suited up and I've driven us to the Shepherd Bean connector, about to exit the rover. You?" "Almost there." I rounded the edge of Bean and saw Shepherd come into view. I kept following Bean's wall to the connector tunnel. Dale, at the wall of the connector, spotted me and waved. Bob's rover stood parked nearby. Through the windows, I could see Sanchez sitting awkwardly in my suit. I scampered to the connector and checked my gizmo. 15 minutes left. Dale crouched down and put both arms under my bubble. On three, he said. I coiled, ready to leap. 1, 2, 3! We timed it perfectly. I jumped a fraction of a second before he flung the bubble upward with all his strength. So I kicked against the ground, flew up, and Dale threw the ball to match me. My ball and I vaulted over the connector with ease. Of course, I bounced around like an idiot when I landed on the other side. Dale climbed over the connector with practice ease by using its many handrails. He landed next to me just as I got back up. With Bean and Shepard behind us, we faced a smaller dome of Armstrong ahead. The external tank stood to one side, partially hidden by their complicated network of pipes and valves.
My face itches, said Sanchez over the radio.
Sucks to be you, I said. Dale and I headed for the tanks.
This suit is quite uncomfortable, Sanchez continued. Can't I just close the rover hatch, pressurize, and wait for you in comfort?
No, said Dale. Always have the rover ready for quick entry. That's how we do things. She grumbled to herself but didn't press the issue. I rolled the first line of pipes. 3 huge, looming pressure tanks dominated the structure. Each one had Landvik stenciled along the side. I pointed to the middle of 4 valves on the nearest pipe. Turn this valve all the way off. Off? Dale asked. Yeah, off. Just trust me. These pipes have blowout zones, cleaning access, and a bunch of other shit that makes it a mess to deal with. Gotcha. He grabbed the crank with his thick gloves and muscled it closed. I pointed to another valve, this one in a pipe 3 meters above the ground. Now open that one to full. He jumped up and grabbed the pipe with both hands. He monkey-barred to the valve, braced his feet on a pair of lower pipes, and turned the valve. He grunted with effort. These valves are tight. They've literally never changed state, I said. We're using them for the first time. The valve handle finally gave, and Dale gasped with relief. There. Okay, down here. I gestured at a mess of pipes with 4 valves on it. Close all those except the 3rd one. That one should be full open. I checked my gizmo while Dale worked. 10 minutes. Sanchez, how accurate is that 1-hour estimate on chloroform toxicity?
Quite accurate, she said. Some people will already be in critical condition.
Dale redoubled his pace. Done. Next. Just 1 more, I said. I led him away from the pipe maze to a 1/2-meter-wide outflow pipe and pointed to a valve that controlled it. Turn this to full open, and we're done. He grabbed the handle and tried to crank it. It didn't budge. Dale, you have to turn the handle, I said. The hell you think I'm trying to do? Try harder. He turned around, gripped with both hands, and pushed against the ground with his legs. The crank still refused to move. Damn it, Dale said. My heart nearly beat out of my chest. I looked at my useless hands. With the hamster ball surrounding me, I had no way to grip the valve. All I could do was watch. Dale strained as hard as he could. God damn it! Does the rover have a toolbox, I asked, a wrench or something? No, he said through gritted teeth. I took it out to make room for the inflatable. That meant the nearest wrench was in town. It would take way too long to retrieve one.
What about me? Sanchez said over the radio. Can I help?
No good, said Dale. It takes hours to learn how to climb in an EVA suit. I'd have to go get you and carry you here. That would take a long time, and even then you're not very strong. You wouldn't help much. This was it. This was as far as we'd get. 1 valve away from victory, but no further. 2,000 people would die. Maybe we could get back into town and save a few by dragging them into air shelters. Probably not. By the time we got in, everyone would be dead. I looked around for anything that could help, but the surface around Artemis is the definition of nothing. Lots of regolith and dust. Not even a friendly rock to hit the valve with. Nothing. Dale fell to his knees. I couldn't see his face through the visor, but I heard his sobs over the radio. My stomach tied into knots. I was about to throw up. I welled up, about to cry. That just made my throat hurt even more. That pipe had really done a number on me. And
And then I knew what I had to do. The realization should have panicked me. I don't know why it didn't. But instead, I just felt a great calm. The problem was solved. "Dale," I said softly.
"Oh, God,"
Dale rasped. "Dale, I need you to do something for me."
What?
I pulled the pipe from my belt. "I need you to tell everyone I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for everything I did."
"What are you talking about?"
"And I need you to tell Dad I love him."
"Okay, that's the most important thing. Tell Dad I love him."
"Jazz," he stood up.
"What are you doing with that pipe?"
"We need leverage." I gripped the pipe with both hands and pointed the sharp end forward. "And I've got it. If this won't turn it, nothing will."
I rolled my ball over to the handle. "But the pipe's inside your hamster ball. Oh, no!
I probably won't last long enough to turn the handle. You'll have to grab the pipe and finish for me."
"Jazz!" He reached toward me.
It was now or never. Dale had lost focus. I can't blame him. It's hard to watch your best friend die, even if it is for the greater good.
"I forgive you, buddy. For everything. Goodbye."
I thrust the sharp end of the pipe through the edge of my ball. Air hissed out through the pipe. I'd just given the vacuum a straw to suck on. The pipe grew cold in my hands. I pushed harder and wedged the pipe into the valve handle's spokes. My hamster ball stretched and ripped near the puncture site. I had a fraction of a second left, at best. With all my strength, I shoved the pipe to the side and felt the handle give. Then physics showed up with a vengeance. The ball ripped itself to shreds. One second I was pushing on the pipe, the next I was flying through the void. All noise stopped immediately. Blinding sunlight assaulted my eyes. I squinted in pain. The air fled from my lungs. I gasped for more. I could expand my chest, but nothing came in. Weird feeling. I landed face up on the ground. My hands and neck burned while the rest of my body, protected by clothing, roasted more slowly. My face ached from the onslaught of burning light. My mouth and eyes bubbled, the fluids boiling off in the vacuum. The world went black, and consciousness slipped away. The pain stopped.
"Dear Jazz, according to the news, something's very wrong with Artemis. They say the whole city went offline. There's been no contact at all. I don't know why my email would be the exception, but I have to try. Are you there? Are you okay? What happened?"
Chapter 17. I awoke to darkness. Wait a minute. I awoke? How am I not dead? I tried to say. I actually said.
"Daughter?"
It was Dad's voice.
"Can you hear me?"
He took my hand. It didn't feel right, though. The sensation was dulled.
"Not see. You have bandages over your eyes."
I tried to hold his hand, but it hurt.
"No, don't use your hands," he said. "They're also injured."
"She shouldn't be awake," said a woman's voice. It was Doc Roussel. "Jazz, can you hear me?" "How bad is it?" I asked her. "You're speaking Arabic," she said. "I can't understand you."
"She asked how bad it is," Dad said.
"It's going to be a painful recovery, but you'll survive."
"Not me. The city. How bad is it?"
I felt a pinprick on my arm.
"What are you doing?" Dad asked.
"She shouldn't be awake," Roussel said. And then I wasn't. I drifted in and out of consciousness for a full day. I remember snippets here and there. Reflex tests, someone changing my bandages, injections, and so on. But I was only semi-alert until they stopped groping me. Then I'd return to the void. "Jazz? Huh? Jazz, are you awake?" It was Doc Roussel.
Yes. I'm going to take the bandages off your eyes. Okay. I felt her hands on my head. The padding on my face unwrapped and I could finally see. I winced at the light. As my eyes adjusted, I saw more of the room. I was in a small hospital-like room. I say hospital-like because Artemis doesn't have a hospital, just Doc Russo's sick bay. This was a room in the back somewhere. My hands were still bandaged. They felt awful. They hurt, but not too bad. The doc, a 60-something woman with gray hair, shined a flashlight in each of my eyes. Then she held up three fingers. How many fingers? Is the city okay? She wiggled her hand, one thing at a time. How many fingers? Three? Okay. What do you remember? I looked down at my body. Everything seemed to be there. I wore a hospital smock and I'd been tucked into the bed. My hands were still bandaged. I remember popping a hamster ball. I expected to die. By all rights, you should have, she said. But Dale Shapiro and Loretta Sanchez saved you. From what I hear, he threw your body over the Armstrong Shepherd connector. Sanchez was on the other side. She dragged you into a rover and pressurized you. You were in a vacuum for a total of 3 minutes. I looked at my gauze mittens. And that didn't kill me? The human body can survive a few minutes of vacuum. Artemis's air pressure is low enough that you didn't get decompression sickness. The main threat is oxygen starvation, same as drowning. They saved you just in time. Another minute, and you'd be dead. She put her fingers on my throat and watched a clock on the wall. You have second-degree burns on your hands and the back of your neck. I'm assuming they directly contacted the lunar surface. And you have a pretty bad sunburn on your face. We'll have to check you for skin cancer once a month for a while. But you'll be all right. What about the city? I asked. You should talk to Rudy about that. He's right outside. I'll get him. I grabbed her sleeve. But, Jazz, I'm your doctor, so I'll take good care of you. But we're not friends. Let go of me. I released her. She opened the door and stepped out. I caught a glimpse of Svoboda in the room beyond. He craned his neck to look in. Then Rudy's impressive build blocked the view. Hello, Jazz, Rudy said. How do you feel? Did anyone die? He closed the door behind him. No. No one died. I gasped in relief and my head fell to the pillow. Only then did I realize how clenched up I'd been. Thank fucking God. You're still in enormous trouble, I figured. If this had happened anywhere else, there would have been deaths. He clasped his arms behind him. As it is, everything worked in our favor. We don't have cars, so no one was operating vehicles at the time. Thanks to our low gravity, no one got hurt falling to the ground. A few scrapes and bruises is all. No harm, no foul. He shot me a glare. Three people went into cardiac arrest from chloroform poisoning. All three were elderly with pre-existing lung conditions. But they're okay now, right? Yes, but only through luck. Once people woke up, they checked on their neighbors. If it weren't for our tight-knit community, that wouldn't have happened. Plus, it's easy to carry an unconscious person in our gravity. And no part of town is far away from Dr. Roussel. He cocked his head toward the doorway. She's not thrilled with you, by the way. I noticed. She takes public health seriously. Yeah. He stood quietly for a moment. Care to tell me who was in on this with you? Nope. I know Dale Shapiro was involved. Don't know what you're talking about, I said. Dale just happened to be out on a drive at the time. And Bob Lewis's rover? They're buddies. They lend each other stuff. With Loretta Sanchez. Maybe they're dating, I said. Shapiro's gay. Maybe he's not very good at it. I see, Rudy said. Can you explain why Lene Landvik transferred 1 million slugs to your account this morning? Good to know, but I kept a poker face. Small business loan. She's investing in my EVA tour company. You failed the EVA exam. Long-term investment. That's definitely a lie. Whatever. Tired.
I'll let you rest. He walked back to the door. The administrator wants to see you as soon as you're up and about. You might want to pack some light clothes. It's summer in Saudi Arabia right now. Svoboda slipped in through the door as Rudy left.
Hey, Jez! Svoboda pulled up a chair and sat beside the bed. Doc says you're doing great.
Hey, Svobo. Sorry about the chloroform.
No big.
He shrugged. I'm guessing the rest of town isn't as forgiving.
People don't seem that mad. Well, some are, but most aren't.
Seriously? I said. I knocked the whole town out. He wiggled his hand.
That wasn't just you. There were a lot of engineering failures. Like, why aren't there detectors in the air pipeline for complex toxins? Why did Sanchez store methane, oxygen, and chlorine in a room with an oven? Why doesn't life support have its own separate air partition to make sure they'll stay awake if the rest of the city has a problem? Why is life support centralized instead of having a separate zone for each bubble? These are the questions people are asking.
He put his hand on my arm.
I'm just glad you're okay.
I put my hand on his. The effect was kind of lost with all the bandaging.
Anyway, he said, the whole thing gave me a chance to bond with your dad.
Really?
Yeah, he said. After we woke up, we formed a two-man team to check on my neighbors. It was cool. He brought me a beer afterward.
I widened my eyes. Dad bought a beer.
For me, yeah. He drank juice. We spent an hour talking about metallurgy. Awesome guy.
I tried to imagine Dad and Svoboda hanging out. I failed.
Awesome guy,
Svoboda repeated a little quieter this time. His smile faded. Svobo, I said. He looked down.
Are you leaving, Jess? Are they going to deport you? I'd hate that.
I put my mittened hand on his shoulder. It'll be all right. I'm not going anywhere.
You sure?
Yeah. I have a plan.
A plan? He looked concerned. Your plans are... should I hide somewhere?
I laughed. Not this time.
Okay.
He was clearly not convinced.
But how are you going to get out of this one? Like, you knocked out the whole town.
I smiled at him. Don't worry. I got this.
Okay, good. He leaned down and kissed my cheek, almost as an afterthought. I had no idea what possessed him to do that. Honestly, I didn't think he had it in him. His bravery didn't last long, though. Once he realized what he'd done, his face became a mask of terror. Oh, shit! I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking.
I laughed, the look in the poor guy's eyes. I couldn't help it. Relax, Bobo. It's just a peck on the cheek. It's nothing to get worked up about.
Right, yeah.
I put my hand on the nape of his neck, pulled his head to mine, and kissed him full on the lips. A good, long kiss, with no ambiguity. When we disengaged, he looked hopelessly confused. Now that, I said, that you can get worked up about. I waited in a blank gray hallway next to a door labeled CD25186. Conrad Down 2 was a little classier than the usual Conrad Down fare, but not much. Strictly blue-collar, but without that smell of desperation the lower levels had. I opened and closed my hands a few times. The bandages were off, but both hands were littered with red blisters. I looked like a leper, or a hooker who gave handjobs exclusively to lepers. Dad rounded the corner, following his gizmo's directions. He finally noticed me.
Ah, there you are.
Thanks for meeting me, Dad, I said. He took my right hand and inspected it. He winced at the damage.
How are you feeling? Does it hurt? If it hurts, you should go to Dr. Roussel.
It's okay. Looks worse than it feels. There I was, lying to Dad again.
So, I'm here. He pointed to the door. CD25186. What is it?
I waved my gizmo across the panel and opened the door. Come in. The large, mostly bare workshop had stark metal walls. Our footsteps echoed as we walked. A work table stood in the center, covered with industrial equipment. Farther back, gas cylinders mounted along the wall fed pipes leading throughout the room. A standard air shelter stood in the corner. 141 square meters, I said. Used to be a bakery. Fully fireproof and certified by the city for high temperature use. Self-contained air filtration system, and the air shelter seats 4 people. I walked over to the tanks. I just had these installed. Central acetylene, oxygen, and neon lines accessible from anywhere in the shop. Full tanks, of course. I pointed to the work table. 5 torch heads, 20 meters of feeder line, and 4 sparkers. Also, 3 full sets of protective gear, 5 masks, and 3 filter shade kits.
Jasmine, Dad said,
Under the table, 23 aluminum stock rods, 5 steel rods, and 1 copper rod. I don't know why you had that copper rod back then, but you had one, so there it is. Rent's prepaid for a year, and the door panel's already keyed to accept your gizmo. I shrugged and let my arms fall to my sides. So, yeah, everything I destroyed back on that day.
It was your idiot boyfriend who destroyed it.
I'm responsible, I said.
Yes, you are.
He ran his hand along the work table.
This must have been very expensive.
It was 416,922 slugs. He frowned.
Jasmine, you bought this with money that...
Dad, please just... I slumped down and sat on the floor. I know you don't like where the money came from, but... Dad clasped his hands behind his back.
My father, your grandfather, had severe depression. He committed suicide when I was 8.
I nodded, a dark corner of our family history. Dad rarely discussed it.
Even when he was alive, he wasn't really alive. I didn't grow up with a father. I don't even know what it is. So I've tried my best.
Dad, you're not a bad father. I'm just a shitty daughter.
Let me finish.
He got to his knees, then sat on his heels. He'd prayed in that position 5 times a day for 60 years. He knew how to make it comfortable.
I've been winging it, you know, as a father. I had nothing to work from, no blueprint. And I chose a hard life for us, an immigrant's life in a frontier town.
No complaints here, I said. I'd rather be a hard-working pauper in Artemis than a rich woman on Earth. This is my home. He held up his hand to silence me.
I tried to prepare you for the world. I never went easy on you, because the world certainly wouldn't go easy on you. And I wanted you to be prepared. We fought at times, of course. Find me a parent and child who haven't. And there are... certainly aspects of your life I wish were different. But in the grand scheme of things, you became a strong, self-reliant woman, and I'm proud of you. And, through extension, proud of myself for raising you.
My lip quivered a bit.
I've lived my life by the teachings of Muhammad, he said. I try to be honest and true in all my decisions. But like any man, I am flawed. I sin. If your peace of mind comes at the price of a small tarnish on my soul, then so be it. I can only hope I've built up enough good grace with Allah that He will forgive me.
He took both my hands.
Jasmine, I accept your recompense, even though I know the source is dishonest, and I forgive you.
I gave him a firm handshake, and we called it a day. Not really. I collapsed into his arms and cried like a child. I don't want to talk about it. Time to face the music. I waited outside Googie's door. The next few minutes would determine whether I got to stay or had to leave. Lenny Lanvik hobbled out on her crutches.
Oh, hi, Jazz. I transferred the money to your account a few days ago.
I saw that. Thanks.
El Palacio sold me Sanchez aluminum this morning. It'll take weeks to work out the paperwork, but we agreed on a price, and we're good to go. Loretta's already designing the smelter.
She has some improvements in mind. The new one will prioritize silicon extraction, and you're keeping Loretta Sanchez?
Ah, she said. Yeah.
Are you fucking crazy?
I just paid $500 million for a smelting company that can't smelt. I need somebody to rebuild it. Who better than Sanchez?
But she's the enemy.
Anyone who makes you money is a friend, Lenny said. I learned that from Dad. Besides, she helped save your life, like, 4 days ago. Maybe you guys are even now?
I folded my arms. This is going to bite you in the ass, Lene. She can't be trusted.
Oh, I don't trust her. I just need her. Big difference.
She cocked her head at the doorway.
And Googie says KSC is eager to get oxygen production back online. The city won't be too strict with safety regulations. Weird, huh? You'd think they'd get more picky, not less.
Sanchez in charge, I sighed. This isn't what I had in mind when I came up with the plan.
Well, neither was knocking out the whole city. Plans change.
She checked her watch.
I have to go to a conference call. Good luck in there. Let me know if I can help.
She hobbled away. I watched her go for a moment. She seemed taller than before. Probably a trick of the light. I took a deep breath and walked into Ngugi's office. Ngugi sat behind her desk. She glared at me over her glasses.
Have a seat.
I closed the door and sat in the chair opposite her.
I think you know what I have to do, Jasmine. And it isn't easy for me.
She slid a piece of paper across the desk. I recognized the form. I'd seen it a few days earlier in Rudy's office. It was a formal deportation order.
Yeah, I know what you have to do, I said. You have to thank me.
You must be joking.
Thanks, Jazz, I said. Thanks for keeping El Palacio from taking over. Thanks for eliminating an outdated contract that would have stood in the way of a massive economic boom. Thanks for sacrificing yourself to save Artemis. Here's a trophy.
Jasmine, you're going back to Saudi Arabia.
She tapped the deportation order.
We won't press charges, and we'll cover your living expenses until you adjust to Earth gravity. But that's the best I can do.
After everything I just did for you, you'll just chuck me out with yesterday's trash.
It's not something I want to do, Jasmine. I have to do it. We need to present ourselves as a community that lives under the rule of law. It's more important now than ever before because the Zafo industry is coming. If people think their investments can be blown up without the perpetrator facing justice, they won't invest here at all.
They don't have a choice, I said. We're the only city on the moon.
We're not irreplaceable. We're just convenient, she said. If Zafo companies don't think they can trust us, they'll make their own Luna City, one that protects its businesses. I'm grateful for what you've done, but I have to sacrifice you for the good of the city.
I pulled out a paper of my own and slid it to her.
What's this? She asked.
My confession, I said. Notice I left out any mention of you, the Landvix, or anyone else. It's just me. I signed it at the bottom. She gave me a puzzled look.
You're helping me deport you?
No. I'm giving you a deport Jazz for free card. You're going to put that in a drawer somewhere and keep it for emergencies.
But I'm deporting you right now.
No, you're not. I leaned back in the chair and crossed my legs.
Why not?
Everyone seems to forget this, but I'm a smuggler. Not a saboteur, not an action hero, not a city planner. A smuggler. I worked hard to set up my operation, and it runs smoothly. In the beginning, I had competition, but not anymore. I drove them out of business by having lower prices, better service, and a reputation for keeping my word. She narrowed her eyes.
You must be going somewhere with this, but I don't see where.
Have you ever seen guns in Artemis? Other than the one you have in your desk, I mean? She shook her head.
No.
How about hard drugs? Heroin? Opium? That sort of thing?
Not at any scale, she said. Sometimes Rudy catches a tourist with a personal stash, but it's rare.
Ever wonder why that shit doesn't get into town? I pointed to my chest. Because I don't let it. No drugs, no guns, and I have a bunch of other rules, too. I keep flammables to a minimum, and no live plants. Last thing we need is some weird mold infestation.
Yes, you're very ethical, but...
What happens when I'm gone? I asked. Do you think smuggling will just stop? No. There'll be a short power vacuum. Then someone else would take over. No idea who. But will they be as civic-minded as me? Probably not. She raised an eyebrow. I pressed on. The city's about to have a Zaffo boom. There's going to be jobs galore, construction, and an influx of workers. There'll be new customers for every business in town. New companies will open to keep up with the demand. The population will spike. You've already got estimates, right? She peered at me for a moment.
I think we'll have 10,000 people within the year.
There you go, I said. More people means more demand for contraband. Thousands of people who might want drugs. Shitloads of money flying around, which means more crime. Those criminals will want guns. They'll try to sneak them in through whatever smuggling system and black market is in place. What kind of city do you want Artemis to be? She pinched her chin.
That's a very good point.
All right, so you have my confession. That'll keep me from getting out of line. Checks and balances and all that. She thought about this for an uncomfortably long time. Without breaking eye contact, she pulled a deportation order off her desk and put it in a drawer. I sighed in relief.
We still have the problem of punishment, though.
She leaned forward to her antiquated keyboard computer and began typing. She ran her finger along the screen.
According to this, your account balance is 585,966 slugs.
Yeah? Why?
I thought Lenny paid you a million.
How did you know? Never mind. I paid off a debt recently. Why is this relevant?
I think some restitution is in order. A fine, if you will.
What? I sat bolt upright. Artemis doesn't have fines.
Call it a voluntary contribution to the city's funds.
There's nothing voluntary about it.
Sure there is. She settled back into her chair. You can keep all your money and get deported instead.
Well, this was a win for me. I could always make more money, but I couldn't get undeported. And she had a point. If she didn't punish me, any asshole could do what I did and expect to get away with it. I'd have to take a slap on the wrist. Okay. How much?
550,000 slugs should cover it.
I gasped. Are you fucking kidding me? She smirked.
It's like you said. I need you to control smuggling. If you have a bunch of money, you might retire. And then where would I be? It's best to keep you hungry.
Logically, I came out way ahead. I'd cleared my conscience. But still, the prospect of my account balance going from 6 digits to 5 physically hurt.
Oh, she smiled with a realization. And thanks for volunteering yourself as Artemis's unpaid, unofficial import regulatory body. Of course, I'll hold you responsible for any dangerous contraband in town, regardless of how it got here. So if some other smuggler crops up and lets guns or drugs in, you can expect a chat with me.
I stared blankly. She stared back.
I'll expect that slug transfer by the end of the day, she said. My bluster was completely gone. I stood from the chair and walked over to the door. When I reached for the door handle, I paused.
What's the end game here? I asked.
Once the Zaffo company start up, what happens next? The next big step is taxes.
Taxes? I snorted. People come here because they don't want to pay taxes.
They already pay taxes as rent to KSC. We need to change over to our property ownership and tax model, so the city's wealth is directly tied to the economy. But that's not for a while. She took off her glasses.
It's all part of the life cycle of an economy. First, it's lawless capitalism until that starts to impede growth. Next comes regulation, law enforcement, and taxes. After that, public benefits and entitlements. Then finally, overexpenditure and collapse.
Wait, collapse?
Yes, collapse. An economy is a living thing. It's born full of vitality and dies once it's rigid and worn out. Then through necessity, people break into smaller economic groups and the cycle begins anew, but with more economies. Baby economies. Like Artemis's right now.
Huh, I said.
And if you want to make babies, somebody's got to get fucked. She laughed. You and I will get along just fine, Jasmine. I left without further comment. I didn't want to spend any more time inside the mind of an economist. It was dark and disturbing. I needed a beer. I wasn't the most popular gal around town. I got some dirty looks in the hallways. But I also spotted a few thumbs-ups from my supporters. I hoped the excitement would fade in time. I don't want fame. I want people not to notice me at all. I walked into Hartnell's, not sure what to expect. The regular crowd were in their usual seats, even Dale.
Hey, it's Jazz!
Billy called out. Suddenly, everyone passed out. Each patron tried to outdo the others with ridiculous displays of being unconscious. Some lolled their tongues, others snored with a comedic whistle on the exhale, and a few lay spread eagle on the floor. Har, har, I said, very funny. With my acknowledgement, the prank was over. They resumed their normal quiet drinking with a few subdued giggles. Heya, said Dale. Since you forgave me, I figure I can just show up any time and hang out with you. I only forgave you because I thought I was going to die, I said. But yeah, no takebacks. Billy put a fresh frosty beer in front of me.
The customers took a vote and decided this round's on you. You know, to make up for almost killing everyone.
Oh, is that so? I scanned the bar. Can't be helped, I guess. Put them all in my tab. Billy poured himself a half pint and raised it in the air.
To Jazz! For saving the city! To Jazz!
The patrons called out and raised their glasses. They were happy to toast me if I bought the beer. I guess that was a start. How are the hands? Dale asked. They are burned, blistered, and hurt like hell. I took a sip. Thanks for saving my life, by the way. No problem. You might want to thank Sanchez, too.
Nah.
He shrugged and took another sip. Tyler was really worried about you. He'd like to see you sometime. The three of us could grab lunch, maybe. On me, of course. I bit back the obnoxious comment that swelled up. It was going to be a doozy, too. Instead, I heard myself say, yeah, okay. He clearly didn't expect that answer.
Really? Because, wait, really?
Yeah. I looked at him and nodded. Yeah, we can do that.
Wow, he said, great. Hey, you want to bring that Svoboda guy?
Svobo? Why would I bring him? You two are an item, right? He's clearly crazy about you, and you seemed a little...
No, I mean, it's not like that.
You're just friends then. Dale smirked. I see. We drank quietly for a moment. Then he said, you're totally going to bang that guy.
Oh, shut up! 1,000 slugs says you two get freaky within a month.
I glared at him. He glared back.
Well,
he said. I finished off my pint. No bet.
Ha!
Dear Kelvin, sorry for the slow response. I'm sure you've read all about the chloroform leak in the news. People around here call it the nap. There were no deaths or serious injuries, but I'm shooting you an email just to confirm I'm okay. I did spend 3 minutes sizzling on the lunar surface without a spacesuit. That kind of sucked. No vacuum pun intended. Also, everyone knows I was responsible for the nap.
Which leads me to my next problem. I'm broke. Again. Long story short, the city took most of my money to bitch slap me for my indiscretions. Unfortunately, I hadn't transferred your share of our profits this month, so I'm going to have to owe you. I'll pay you off the moment I can. You have my word. I have some legwork for you. There's a guy named Jin Chu, might be an alias, headed back to Earth right now. He claimed to be from Hong Kong, and that's probably true. He works for a Chinese materials research company. I don't know which one. He got sent home from Artemis for being naughty. They shipped him out a few days ago, so he must be aboard the Gordon. That means you've got 4 days before he arrives at KSC. Hire a detective or whatever to find out where he works. We need that company's name. Because, Kelvin, old buddy, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. That company is about to make billions. I'm going to invest as much as I can in it, and I suggest you do the same. Long story. I'll send you a more detailed email later. Aside from that, we're back to business as usual. Keep the goods coming. Also, we'll be ramping up our smuggling volume soon. Artemis is going to have a population boom. More customers coming our way. We're gonna be rich, buddy. Filthy rich. And hey, once that happens, you should come visit. I've learned a lot about the value of friends lately, and you're one of the best friends I've ever had. I'd like to meet you in person. Besides, who doesn't want to come to Artemis? It's the greatest little city in the world.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Artemis, written by Andy Weir, performed by Rosario Dawson. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Directed by Tim Warner. Edited and mastered by Brian Corcoran. Mixed by Brett Lubansky. Copyright 2017 Andy Weir. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have